percent of Portlanders voted to approve the park's replacement bond. Thank you, council, for your hard work on this behalf. Those dollars are to prevent closure and fund park's most urgent needs, but the $68 million bond will pay for about 19% of the identified major maintenance needs. That leaves grants and partnerships, which will fund probably another 7%, and the general fund is expected to fund 4% or so as we look forward. And so that leaves about 70% or $240 million of unfunded major maintenance over the next 10 years. In addition to unfunded maintenance, over the next 10 years, we will need to spend nearly $500 million in new facilities to meet the needs of the underserved communities or portions of the community in Portland, providing equity for all Portlanders. Our system development charge program, which will come before the council in mid-April, is a vital part of helping to fund that, growth capacity for the parks program. So throughout the presentation, we'll hear more about these significant budget issues and how our budget responds to them. And now a little bit about budget development. So the mayor's budget direction was clear. Budget asks should focus on three priority areas: equity and opportunity, emergency preparedness, and complete neighborhoods. Our four significant issues or challenges, we might call them budget themes, overlap with the mayor's priorities. Most of our proposals heavily overlap in the equity and opportunity and complete neighborhoods priorities, and many have underlying emergency preparedness implications as parks and community centers are expected to provide critical safe havens, communication centers, and gathering places during citywide emergency scenarios. In our budget development process, we engage the public in a variety of ways, including a budget advisory committee with a diverse composition of community leaders, neighborhood representation, labor, other stakeholders, and our Portland Parks Board. They give us more than 100 volunteer hours toward advising on the budget process. In addition, we held a public budget meeting specific to parks on January 7th in Southeast Portland, and over 100 Portlanders participated. And the meeting was reflective of our diverse community with many people of color, immigrants, and refugees, many of which were attending their very first public meeting. And then a new thing we did this year is establish an opportunity for people to comment on our budget through a special email feedback link. And we got over 1,000 comments on our budget, which I think was also very helpful. In your packet, you have a summary sheet. And so as I begin to discuss these themes, you'll have a short little sort of score sheet that you can keep track of, and you'll see that the items on the right-hand side that are shaded in green are those that the budget office has recommended for support. So our first issue is equity inclusion. We're going to start with that because we know that in this area, small strategic investments can leverage big gains for the community. Parks views all of its services through an equity lens and continues to work to ensure that all of our all Portlanders have access. One of the ways that we do this is collect data on who we are currently serving. The slide that you see above shows a sample of race and ethnicity data that we recently started to track in our new PREP, which stands for Parks Race and Ethnicity Project program. This data, which identifies people who've registered for courses at community centers, will help us to inform how successful or unsuccessful we are in providing programs and activities for all Portlanders' diverse communities. Other ways that we work towards ensuring access for all Portlanders include using the new equity assessment tool from the Office of Equity and Human Rights to inform development of our budget proposals. Our budget advisory committee had an introduction to that in our very first meeting and continually referred to that as the packages were being developed. We use race and income data to identify any disparate impacts related to capital projects, a little bit of what Commissioner Fritz mentioned a moment ago. We focus our outreach and public participation processes in communities of color on key projects, programs, and policies by using the city's public involvement standards. and we conduct focus groups and building relationships with members of underserved communities. We also are researching best practices for identifying customers who self-identify as having a disability, and we actually have our own Parks Accessibility Advisory Committee that reviews our work in the formative stages and provides an outside perspective on the issues of barrier-free accessibility. So this next slide on equity inclusion compares Parks workforce data for all our employees on the left to the census data for the city of Portland on the right. I apologize that the text is so small. Providing the opportunity to work is a key part of investing in the Portland community. We employ over 3,000 individuals over the course of a year, including 457 full-time employees. To best serve our diverse community, our employees must reflect our local population, including our increasingly diverse youth population. Ensuring that both our customers and employees are representative of all cultures of Portland is a top priority for Parks. The proposals included in our requested budget are key to helping us achieve this goal. Though these pie charts are a snapshot from 2014, I would also like to discuss the trends we're creating in Parks. In 2011, about 24.5% of all Parks employees were identified as people of color, or self-identified as people of color, non-white, or two or more races. So 24.5 back in 2010. Those are the non-purple slices of that pie. Last year, that had grown from 24.5 to 27.1% of our employees. And this number compares favorably with the 2010 census, which identified Portland's population as being 27.8% non-white or two or more races. So we're making some progress, but we still have a ways to go. So in our budget, requested budget, we have several packages that relate to equity inclusion, including resources to leverage our newly created Equity and Inclusion Manager that we added this past year. And we did that by reprioritizing existing resources, significantly boosting the Bureau's strategic efforts in this area. So of the packages that you see on the slide, packages 3 through 6 are about converting seasonal employees to full-time positions. Full-time work with benefits is a stabilizing force for families and our community. And Portland Parks has long relied on seasonal positions due to the nature of the work. But where work is truly year-long and full-time, we're trying to make a shift. There's no doubt that Portland Parks and Recreation will continue to need seasonal employees, particularly in the summer. But what we found is that that there is a fair amount of year-round work at various parts of the Bureau that is currently being handled by seasonals. PK7, the scholarship one, I'm going to discuss in greater detail in a second. PK9, Parks for New Portlanders, will provide more culturally responsive recreation services and activities, pay for increased mentoring, training, and employment of refugee and immigrant youth, and increase participation from underserved communities in the Parks proposal process. PK12, Gateway Green, will provide a key identified recreational need for the off-road cycling community, and it's located in East Portland, a significantly underserved portion of the city. This project and proposal leverages Metro grant funding, and if the package is funded, the number of park acres per resident will slightly increase in the area. The percentage of residents living within a half mile will also increase, and percentage of residents rating proximity to parks as good or very good in the annual survey will likely increase. PK13 is an equity investment that'll better facilitate communication with limited English proficiency populations, coupled with training to help employees better serve these populations. This is similar to the package that we submitted and wasn't funded last year when we were projecting creating the Equity and Inclusion Manager position. So it creates a program for our employees. PK17, Off-Road Cycling Master Plan, that will help identify several sites in the city to build sustainable trails, access points, and facilities for off-road cycling. PK18, Innovative Food Production, this effort would outline a pathway for Portlanders, especially those who need it most, to access a variety of city-owned property for various methods of food production.
Might just jump in there because it's different from the community garden approach. It's truly more of a community food production. So everybody farms, everybody plants, everybody weeds, everybody harvests together. And so this project would be for a consultant to look at where could we do that and prepare the way for helping people grow healthy food in their own neighborhood.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'd like to talk for a second about scholarships. The Park Scholarship Program discounts fees to make recreation programs more affordable for low-income individuals. The program primarily serves youth and provides discounts to over 3,000 young Portlanders annually. However, in our budget process, there's no dedicated funding for scholarships. Rather, fees are simply waived for qualifying individuals, and PPNR absorbs those scholarships within its existing budget allocations. Over the past 7 years, we've averaged about $437,000 a year in scholarships. But the graph that shows the average is not really the story. I'm sorry, let me restate that. But the average is not really the story, as you see in this graph. The graph shows that requests for support from the scholarship program has increased significantly in recent years, putting a strain on the Bureau's ability to continue to cover the existing number of individuals enrolled in the programs. At the same time, previous councils have endorsed a cost recovery policy that has increased reliance on fee-generated program income. So this creates a tension between two policy objectives that is not sustainable. The more we become dependent on fee revenue, the less equitable our programs become. And since there's no dedicated funding, and in the spirit of fiscal responsibility and transparency, we'll continue to bring scholarship program performance and budget requests to council for guidance. In other words, I believe it's fiscally prudent to identify an amount each year that will be available for scholarships and indicate this amount in our budget and keep you updated on the needs of our community. In the past year, Parks has engaged staff and volunteers and customers in an effort to begin updating our existing scholarship policy. The policy changes aim to allow more flexibility for qualifying customers by providing them with an annual fee waiver credit of up to $200 per individual to be used at their discretion. We're also simplifying the qualification criteria to more closely match the public school's free and reduced lunch program qualifications.
Mike, can I get stop yes. there for a second? Can you give us just a quick primer on who and how those scholarship decisions are made? How does a kid find out they're eligible for a scholarship? Who says, "Oh, I've got one for you"? Tell us a little more about programmatically how that works on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you, Mayor. Good question. It generally happens at the community center level. So community centers vary in terms of both their cost recovery goals and their scholarship needs. So it is promoted at the community center level. People can come in and apply. With the new ActiveNet program that allows online access, there's also an opportunity to apply for scholarships there. But generally, the way that most of them have happened traditionally is at the community center level. As you can imagine, with 13 community centers, this can lead to some inconsistencies. And one of the things that is, I think, important for us is to create some standardization in both process and application of the scholarships.
How are they allocated?
How are they allocated? By fee waivers, by discounts.
How many does each community center director know that they can distribute?
It is based on requests and need and has not, to this date, we haven't established a target. And so that's one of the reasons that I believe that we should take a hard look at our scholarship program and make a conscious decision on how much we allocate each year.
Final question for me before we let Carl get a word in edgewise. Break these down.
I could, Mayor. I don't have those numbers with me, but I'd be happy to get back to you with a breakdown of the past year by community center.
The question I have is, how do you measure the effectiveness of the scholarships? In other words, back in 2010, you had $4,000 worth, and it's increasing to $624 now. What's the result? How do you measure the effectiveness of the scholarships?
That's also a good question. I think the way that we measure it right now is number of participants in programs. One of the things we're trying to do is, especially in youth, is to get youth physically active and engaged. And when we find that fees are a burden, we offer a discount. By the way, we don't offer 100% discount, so we have a partial discount program. So I'd say the clearest way is to just identify how many participants that we have.
Can you give an estimate as to how much somebody has to put in to how much of a discount do they get? About 90%, is it, did I understand?
I think it's up to 50%.
Up discount. To 50%.
Right.
So they have something in the game of their own money, their own effort to be there, so they will show up. I'm afraid somebody gets a discount, they don't show up, that's all.
Right. I'd also say, though, that for many of our families, a 50% discount, or requiring to even pay 50% of the fees is still a barrier. And so those folks don't participate in the programs.
So the PK7.
Can you give the discount to somebody else that will? So we get a higher percentage, more people in the program? If somebody gets it and they can't afford it, can you then say, okay, you're not participating, so we can give it to somebody who will?
Oh, yeah, that's the way it works. Unfortunately, that person that couldn't afford it is not participating.
Right, so, I understand that.
Yeah.
But just to be clear, we don't currently have a scholarship pot of money that when it's gone, it's gone. It's at the discretion of the community center. This PK7 request is $160,000 to establish an actual program, to either have a consultant or a staff person hired that would manage this and figure out the better, more precise answers to some of your questions, and also to encourage more families who cannot afford the fees at all to be able to participate. And then the remaining $200,000 would be actually setting up a pot of money that, when it's determined, as Director Abati said, by free or reduced school lunch criteria or other factors, that there actually would be an amount of money that would be dedicated to offset the council's previous direction that rates are supposed to cover, or fees are supposed to cover, a lot of the cost of the programming.
Mike, how is this scholarship program different from the card that Nike used to fund, the Access Card?
Commissioner, I'm not sure I can answer that question. I don't know if any of our, Jason, do you have a?
That's an outside contribution to support our scholarship fund. So that's the sort of contribution we're looking for is private business to offer up a program like that. It fed into our existing program.
And the other discussion that we had at the Budget Advisory Committee meeting and with the Parks Board is that potentially there's a partnership with the Parks Foundation to help garner those private donations.
Right.
You need a dedicated staff person to be able to do that, and that's part of what this request is also.
Can I ask a quick question? In terms of the $200,000 to support the scholarship, given this graph, you're saying in 2014, the approximate value of scholarships was $620,000.
Right.
And so just even with the $200,000, I assume you wouldn't reduce your scholarships to $200,000. You'd keep them at this higher level.
Thank you for clarifying that, Andrew. And that's right. So what we did is we looked at the average, which I mentioned was $437,000. And we would continue to fund, discount, if you will, our fees, $400,000. But I would like to, over maybe a three-year period, change that to it's an actual allocation of our budget. So the 437 plus 200 is 630, which is close to what we experienced this year.
Commissioner Fritz, can I just follow up on one question? I know we have time is short, so we're not going to spend the entire time on this one item. But I remember when I was the commissioner in charge, the African American Healthcare Coalition had a program funded by a grant that allowed its members to get a discounted rate. And one of the theories was, by getting people, particularly who were at higher risk of certain kinds of preventable illnesses, into our community centers, we could bring down their health costs. So it seemed at the time that there was a great opportunity to partner with healthcare facilities and insurers to bring down the costs, get people in with all the obvious benefits. How does that fit into your long-term thinking?
Well, absolutely. It's about healthy parks. Healthy Portland is maybe Director Budget could talk about our RX Play program that we have now.
Thank you, Commissioner. For us, health is a key determinant, and we are looking in our strategic plan. We focus on community health and the ways that we can intersect with healthcare providers and healthcare organizations. RX Play is a pilot program that we have utilized where a doctor evaluating an adolescent and determines that that child has levels of obesity or inactivity can actually write a prescription for them to come to a community center and sign up for a class that would get them playing basketball or some sort of active recreation to address that. I think that's a phenomenal program. There are some other models. I think it's been partially funded by the National Recreation and Parks Association over the past few years. But I think we continue to look for ways to sync in healthy communities with parks and recreation.
So can I just add one thing? Mike, sure. I'm interested in the fact that my Medicare provider pays for my monthly gym membership. Mm-hmm. That encourages me to go, reduces its cost.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to, there seems like there's a correlation here between medical providers and insurers and kids. I mean, it's not a big leap for me to think that they might pay for part of the program if the kids show up. Have you thought about it? But my guess is you haven't really pursued that.
We are going to. As a matter of fact, I was discussing Miami-Dade as a park system has a great relationship with the State Department of Health and University of Miami, and they have some models that I've been looking at in the last couple of weeks on ways of engaging the healthcare community to sort of expand this idea that these kind of health programs could happen in community centers or in parks.
And when I look at the proposal, it looks to me like the salary is about $106,000 if you take out benefits for this consultant. Is there any effort to look for a volunteer who has lots of experience that would do something like this for nothing? I mean, there's a lot of smart people in this city who have a commitment to this. Yeah. It just seems to me to pay you could take that $100,000, put it back in the scholarships, now you have another third, and you get somebody who's got the experience who's willing to donate their time.
I would welcome that. If you've got some folks to follow up with, I'd love to do that. This could be a staff person who has a community health background, or it could be a consultant. But if there are volunteers out there that like to assist, I believe that there will be a lot of coordination with OHSU and Legacy and Providence and Kaiser. A key person that can really spend 40 hours a week on this is would love to find that person.
Okay.
Just to be clear, this is a one-time request.
Yes.
And some of our other one-time requests are not really one-time requests, but because of the requirement to cut proposed cuts, we were not able to do that. But this one really is for a project for somebody to work full-time to look at all of the issues that have been brought up here. So that's the core of the request here is the $160,000. Dante, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Commissioner. Just maybe I missed the answer, Mike, but just to put a face to this, how many youth are we actually talking about when we talk about the number in terms of scholarships? And do we know either generically maybe age or demographic data and or is there a particular area in the city that a majority tend to come from?
Dante, I'd say that it's well over 1,000. And I can get you more details about maybe in conjunction with the mayor's question about where scholarships break down by community center, maybe give you some hard numbers on the numbers of youth. And I'm sorry. Is it 3,000 that? 3, yes, I'm sorry. 3,000 scholarships. Yep.
Just one question, and that is with the increase between 2013 to 2014, approximately 23%, have we been able to capture a corresponding or close to a corresponding number of new clients through the scholarship program?
I'm thinking about the question. It's very difficult to gauge that. I'd like to go back to our community center folks and ask that specific question.
Good discussion. Let's let you move on.
Okay. Thank you.
It is okay to interrupt you in the middle of the presentation, but no.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
I'll still hold you back a little bit.
So let's see. I believe we're on to the next two more of our budget themes and the challenges, one being restoration of services and the second being safety and security. So here's a performance metric. An important quality of service metric is the percentage of Portland residents who rate the overall quality of parks as good or very good. This measure is tracked through the city auditor's annual community survey. Currently, 85% of Portlanders rate their parks as good or very good. Our 2020 vision goal is established at 90%. So we are high at 85%. That's not bad for a government agency, but we aspire to be even higher.
It's worth noting that we were given a document earlier by Andrew that listed trend lines. And so it says that from August 09 through 14-15, only the two bureaus that actually took the most cuts in terms of discretionary and overhead were Parks and Fire and Rescue from the general fund. And so that's a significant factor. And yet, in your PowerPoint, you show that during the same period of time, you maintained or were slightly above 85% ratings with the public. So that's pretty extraordinary when you had fewer resources. And so how do you account for that?
Commissioner, our employees work really, really hard. And this issue of restoration of services is something that is on my mind, because our folks, particularly not last year, but have had their responsibilities. I've got people who are responsible for 30 or 40 parks, maintenance in 30 or 40 parks. It's hardly sustainable. So I give the credit to our employees and want to do right by them. So.
I agree with that assessment. Our employees work way very, very hard, and many of them get paid very, very little, as we know from our $15 an hour discussion. I want to draw your attention to page 8 of 28 in the City Budget Office analysis, which shows the percentage of households rating the quality of parks as good or very good by neighborhood coalition. And it's starkly obvious that in the East Portland Neighborhood Organization area, its satisfaction is only 68%. So, and the reason is, as we saw from the earlier map showing where we have parks and where we don't, that despite Commissioner Fisher's heroic efforts over the course of the recession, we are still way behind in providing services to East Portland. And indeed, as we're now moving into the discussion of safety and security, as you heard in the ranger discussion last week, we have no dedicated rangers in East Portland. So that's part of our ask.
Okay.
I just ask one question about on the issue of cuts. I think that some people reading the materials might be confused about we're discussing cuts, but according to the City Budget Office, the base general fund budget for parks has gone up since 2009 by over 30%. And I think that there is an answer reconciling that, but I think it may be worthwhile to put it on the table.
Commissioner, I may pass it over to my finance manager, but the actual dollar amount is not equivalent to the cost of delivering services. And so, yes, budgets have gone up. There have been COLA adjustments, a number of things that have not put boots on the ground. And so a big way of explaining this is that we have reduced many, many positions over the years. And in addition, we got O&M additions. So as you know, and we talk about that quite a bit, when we brought a new park online, we've gotten additional funding in our Cal target for that operations and maintenance. But on the other side of the ledger, there were cuts from the general fund. So that's a part of the explanation. Anything else, Jeff?
Yeah, the first year on that chart had a significant $5.4 million backfill for our levy from 2002. The council has spent a couple of years saving up for that, so that was a big infusion into our budget. 22% of that 33 was that one year alone from backfill of that levy. So the service level didn't change with that 22%. And as Mike mentioned, the $3.5 million of O&M and some transfers of special appropriations over the years and fountains and other assets have kind of increased general fund actual dollars, but not necessarily service.
So if you started the clock in 09-10 instead of 08-09, you'd have very different numbers.
So when the levy expired, council made a commitment to make up for at least some of that with new general fund.
Kind of a glide path down, yes. Okay, next slide is we also track the percentage of residents that rate the quality of our community centers and programs as good or very good. In 2014, 74% of these services were rated that way. Our target's to increase that to 80%. And we believe the following proposals will help us achieve those two goals. PK 1 and 2 are linked together. So in the 2013-14 budget, council asked parks to utilize some contingency ending fund balance from a 2002 parks levy to provide 2 years bridge funding for several core programs, including recreation programming at Selwood Community Center, natural areas maintenance, aquatics programming at Buckman Pool, and central services maintenance positions until future general fund ongoing resources could bridge the gap. These packages wanted to restore and adequately fund services and programs that are highly valued and supported by the community, including those mentioned above, and full funding for operations of the decorative and interactive fountain maintenance program. PK 14, Summer Free for All. This package funds the following program elements. Mobile recreation program that serves up, that would allow us to serve up to 20 sites per week and 4,500 children each summer, primarily in Outer East in our most parks deficient areas. Current budget, our current budget allows for about 5 sites per week. This would add another 15 sites.
Before you move on, Mike, I just want to go back to the fountain issue, because when the budget committee was discussing our priorities, clearly the council for the past 6 years has said that yes, Selwood Community Center and Buckman Pool are a priority, and so is natural area maintenance. So we didn't want to offer that up as a cut. The Parks was assigned fountain maintenance from the Water Bureau, which is another reason that the Parks budget went up, because that came with some resources. It didn't actually cover the entire cost of fountain maintenance. This one-time package, which the budget office is recommending, is the correct number for what it actually costs to maintain the fountain. And this is one there where actually we would like this to be ongoing rather than one time, because the previous services that I mentioned, I believe, are more core to mission for Portland Parks and Recreation. The fountain maintenance is something that's a citywide priority, and so I would put that on your list. My request list, anyway.
Thank you. So do we have the summer the free lunch program, that gap between late August and Labor Day? We have that plugged permanently?
Yes, we do, Commissioner.
Okay. Yep. Is that under
Is
that under your free-for-all, or it's just
it's in your in the summer free-for-all program, but it's we've considered it funded.
Okay, great.
So just a quick question from Andrew. So CBO is recommending PK2, but it's listed as one time, even though Commissioner Fritz has clearly identified that it's an ongoing expense. So is the expectation just that we'd be back here next year asking for more one-time money?
So it was recommended by, or it was requested by the Bureau as one-time funding. So again, we're recommending in favor of their request. One of the larger issues that I think we're going to be working with the mayor on in his proposed budget is making sure that we don't add to the serial one-time list, so that we're not funding ongoing programs with one-time resources, that to the extent we're using one-time resources, they're truly going to one-time needs, pilot projects, you know, things that are going to be short-term in nature and will end. So I think this will be a conversation.
You know, on this topic, Mayor Bloomberg and other New York mayors have been able to get nice rich people in New York to fund parks assets of citywide significance in New York. And it strikes me that these fountains are high-profile things that it would be nice if we could find nice rich people to fund here. So I would suggest that the mayor, who's I know has spent time with Mayor Bloomberg, catch up with them and ask, how do you find those rich people and get them to fund parks assets?
And we do have a good set of partners, especially for the Halperin fountains, and they're going to be doing a local improvement district to help maintain them. It's not going to cover the cost of all of the decorative fountains. And we have a slim number of philanthropic rich people in our town, and they tend to get asked over and over again for various priorities, and so I don't think we can rely on.
Unfortunately, they're all moving to Vancouver because they don't want to pay the street fee, Steve. So we're going to we'll offer them a bargain.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Summer Free for All would also expand our lunch sites,
Mike, that's additional money. So this is money above and beyond the 100,000 meals that you serve. This would allow you to, this is one of the shining programs of this city. And since hunger, I believe, Mayor, is one of our three priority items, and this is not just a food program. This is where stressed out families in the summer can drop a kid that then has got an adult supervising them, doing healthy activities and a healthy meal. Just personally for me, this is the essence of what a park system's all about. So this would allow us to expand the number and then contract with more food service providers to get more meals?
Commissioner, actually, it would allow us to provide about the same level of service that we did last year. So one of the challenges that we're having is on the private fundraising side. So this would protect most of the lunch sites, with the exception of the playgrounds. The playgrounds is an expansion, would allow us to expand to the east side.
Has there been a decline in federal funds available through the entitlement program, or is that about the same?
No. No, I don't think so. It's just the fact that we're leveraging about 5-to-1 private dollars to local dollars. We also have other funding needs other than Summer Free for All, and so our staff that does fundraising has been stretched. I'll move to the next one. The theme is safety and security. As you know, we have a pretty comprehensive emergency management and security program, and we're working closely with the Bureau of Emergency Management, other agency partners, to improve our plans and practices. And this overlaps with the Mayor's emergency preparedness priority, and so we're requesting a critical investment in public safety for our community centers, including automatic lockdown equipment, which we've piloted successfully at one community center, security cameras, and other equipment and staff training that will enable safer and more effective emergency responses. As much as our public schools must be equipped and trained to protect our children in a changing world, so must we in our community centers.
And this one, I believe, is a crucial public safety investment. It is a truly one-time investment. And I've been shocked since becoming commissioner in charge of PERC, the number of text messages I get reporting on incidents in and around our community centers and parks. They are places where people gather, and so they're also places where things happen. So this is a big concern for me.
I'm going to try to go quickly through. Our final theme is major maintenance, and that's something you're well familiar with. Many of our budget requests are for major maintenance. The bond accomplishes about 19% of our need. And the facilities condition index measures asset deficiencies at our facilities and pools based on data gathered through an annual inspection program. And so the graph that you see shows 77.5% of facilities and pools as deficient as of 2014, resulting in an overall fair condition for all of our assets. Our goal is to bring facilities rating for the overall system into the good category, or less than 5% of our assets being deficient. So that's why this is one of those examples where a high number is not a good thing. High number is a bad thing. We would like to reduce increase the condition index of our assets.
Mike, can I ask you a question related to major maintenance, which, frankly, I don't expect immediate answer to, but. And it's a question that I've been meaning to ask a variant of to PBOT, but I'm afraid of the answers. I haven't asked them. But when you have a big major maintenance backlog and you don't anticipate getting enough money to cover it, could you do an analysis of if we will only ever have the amount of money we have now, what facilities could we afford to maintain and what facilities should we write off because we can't afford to maintain them all? Like with PBOT, I thought of asking them that question, and I'm afraid the answer would be, well, if we're only going to have the money we have now, the only streets we'll be able to maintain are Division and Burnside.
Yes.
Are you looking at parks in a situation where if you had to assume you'll never get more money, the only facilities you could maintain are the Selwood Community Center and the Buckman Pool or something like that?
Yes, Commissioner. And as a matter of fact, those kinds of analyses are what have led us in previous years to suggest Selwood and Buckman as closures. And we've looked at both the consequence, and I think the next slide is going to show a little graph that reflects the asset management strategy, the consequence of failure, which in our case means a lot or is measured a lot by how many visits are there in a particular facility, and then the probability of failure being the vertical axis. That kind of analysis is what led us to say, you know, we have some facilities where if we had to reduce, they're serving fewer people. However, previous councils have, you know, made it clear that they've not wanted to close those things. So that's the challenge that's probably faces both bureaus equally.
And I would say that the meeting where I had to go to the Metropolitan Learning Center PTSA meeting and tell them that, no, I don't have any money to rebuild Cooch Park was one of the most unpleasant experiences of my life. So I would not want to be the commissioner in charge of parks if we were to propose closing facilities and having to go to neighborhoods and say, sorry, you're out of luck. And I'm not sure how we would pick which neighborhoods to tell you're out of luck.
So I won't go into the details on this chart, but you'll see that in the upper right-hand corner is a red dot. The others are blue. The red is just highlighting this particular budget package. This is a graph of a scatter diagram of HVAC system, ventilation systems in our major buildings and pools. If you are in the upper right, that's bad. And so that's a high consequence of failure and a high probability of failure. And that's where Mount Scott Community Center and pool falls. I want to also mention, just, you know, we think of Mount Scott, and you know that community center, it's fairly old, been around a long time, but there's two blue dots fairly close to that. That's East Portland Community Center and Southwest Community Center. And why they're there is their ventilation systems are 17 and 18 years old. They're expected to last 20 years. So even some of our newer facilities have components that are approaching the end of their life. Next slide. Using similar asset management principles and criteria, as Andrew mentioned, a citywide ranking of infrastructure projects was completed. This ranking of all city facilities, not just parks, is indicated in parentheses on these charts. For example, the citywide ranking of infrastructure projects identified the Charles Jordan Community Center as the city's number one maintenance priority. We've included major maintenance needs that have long been visible to the community that we serve, items like failed lighting and electrical service at Scavone Stadium and the Mount Scott ventilation system. But there's other critical needs that include the unseen, the leaking Lake Zither at the Lansu Chinese Garden, as well as failed culverts and needed restoration in Forest Park. PK 20 and 21 are two packages. You see they're not ranked. That will help us take care of a non-capitalizable asset, the ecological health of the vegetation in our natural areas. And since they can't be capitalized, they were not eligible for ranking.
In the Renew Forest Park, the City Budget Office is recommending only part of the funding. And I'll remind the council that it is on our legislative priorities and that we're asking the state for $2 million and potentially eventually for $20 million. So this is one where the investment now would potentially have great leveraging opportunities.
Since our budget was submitted February 2nd, two items have also developed that Commissioner Fritz and I would like to bring to the council's attention. First, last week you received a report on the state of the Ranger program. Security Manager Galena Burley and Hassan Arthuri described the inequity of resources for Rangers on the east side of the city. We believe that we should add 4 2-person teams to cover the Springwater Corridor, North Portland, and East Portland, along with a Ranger supervisor and a dispatcher. The cost for that is $768,000. And secondly, in January of this year, the city implemented Title 11, the new tree code. A key component of that effort was enhanced customer service. As a result, we now have urban forestry professionals at the Permit Center on the 1900 building, available to answer questions, provide over-the-counter tree permits, review development applications, and operate a new customer service hotline, 823-TREE. The good news is that service to Portlanders is greatly improved. I spent a day in the customer service center and was delighted to hear from customers who had come in and had their answers questions answered quickly, and we're very grateful for that. However, the call volume, number of visits to the permit center, and the time required to address each inquiry has greatly increased since this time last year. Based on the level of staffing that council authorized, Commissioner Fritz and I believe that additional staff are needed as soon as possible in order to deliver on our promise to the community. We need one additional tree tech at the permit center and one additional urban forestry supervisor overseeing Title 11 outreach and training. The cost is $270,000.
And we'll circulate those requests to the council offices. As you remember, we were all required to put our budgets in on February 2nd, so we had only had 32 days of implementation of the tree code at that time, and we weren't prepared to figure out, well, we back up. Back in 2013, when we funded it, you'll recall that we asked for more staff and were directed by council to pare down that number. So we've been managing, but especially when we have a weekend like the one we just had with lots of tree failures and such, we have been pulling urban forestry staff off other assignments in order to work on the tree code, and there's a limit to the number of hours that we can have these professionals work.
As I close, I'd like to thank the council for their strong support of the people, the places, and the programs of Portland Parks and Recreation. Your leadership enabled us to pass a badly needed bond, and you've shown strong support for both repairing our aging system and ensuring that all Portlanders have access to a park, a community center, a pool, a natural area. In the past year, I've had the opportunity to discuss parks issues with parks directors from Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles, Austin, among others. The support for parks that our community and our elected officials demonstrate on a daily basis makes us the envy of the nation. The women and men of Portland Parks and Recreation thanks you for your encouraging support. The Parks 2020 Vision established an advisory board for the Bureau, the Portland Parks Board. This group has served as the eyes and ears of our community, advising the Parks Commissioner and myself on a wide variety of topics, including the recently passed Smoke and Tobacco-Free Parks Initiative. I want to thank the Parks Board for their volunteer service, their hard work, and their wisdom, and ask the Chair of the Board, Kathy Fong Stevens, to share a few remarks.
Great, thank you. I echo Mike's thanks for support of parks and the programs that we have going, and for recognition of the needs, and also for passage of the bond. Very much appreciate that. And I have the pleasure of saying that this year's Budget Advisory Committee, which I chaired also, involved about 30 people plus an extraneous, an additional process of involving others. And our we were united in our support of what Commissioner Fritz and Mike Abate brought to the City Council as far as recommendations. And I'll tell you that that's not always the case. And I think this is my fourth year, maybe my third. And there have been disagreements in the past, different priorities. This year, we're very pleased to be able to support the packages that were brought forth. And part of the reason for that, I have to say, is because the commissioner, Mike Abate, this director, and several staff members were at every single Budget Advisory Committee meeting and also are involved in the Parks Board meetings as well. And so the spirit of collaboration was very high. And I think the only thing that I would say to add is that we have a couple of prioritized ongoing packages that we would like to recommend, but were not included in this, partly because we really did not want to have the case of ongoing budget requests being required a similar cut, because we wanted to keep existing core services. But if ongoing budget funds become more available, we would like to look at youth and community investments, such as expanding the grant program and the IFCC staff, and also rangers and gang outreach staff, and providing more support for that. But that, again, we did not want to recommend those at the expense of existing core services. So again, I appreciate your support and recognition of the parks budget and the parks programs.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for your service. So questions for Mike, Jeff, Kathy, other follow-up
requests? I have questions.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Partly, I just want to thank you. It's so gratifying to look at these maps that I had requested. We have these geographic map. Well, of course, all maps are geographic, but that show that the spending in East Portland, especially for capital improvements, has gone up dramatically. In fact, we're the high spenders. Yay! But still, you're not spending as much on programs in East Portland. I imagine that is because there are not enough parks out there. So thank you. And yet, we are going to still keep asking until we are equal. And the next park on the list is Park Lane Park. It's a hugely high priority in East Portland. And it's right in the center of things. So thank you. All of the packages that you requested under equity, many of them are will benefit East Portland. I support them all. Summer free-for-all programs. I used to be a board member for Park Rose. Parks is often it's working hand-in-hand with schools to help kids. And, you know, our kids are our future. And parks can have those park programs can have a huge impact on children, especially in the summertime. Now, one of the things that I was looking at are some of your instruments here, your new instruments, this dashboard. And I know it's brand new, right? We didn't have this last year. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So equity is your most important issue, and yet I don't see an equity measure on your index. So on your dashboard. So I would love to see that and consider that brand new dashboard. I'm sure that you haven't had a chance to work it out completely, but for me, some kind of an equity measure as a key performance measure, and I would urge you to consider it as a children's measure on there too. Recreation. I don't see a recreation measure on your dashboard. I see this thing, and of course, I'm going to make a joke, and everybody will hate me for it who works in this area. But your second measure is about weeds, right? So I'd rather that your second measure was about children. So think about that. If this dashboard is going to be an important measure, it should really measure what you guys do. And then I'm looking at this. And great, I'm glad that you're measuring, but I can't tell anything from this measure except that you do serve all Portlanders, and I appreciate that. But I'd like to see a measure that showed the percentage of these different groups that you served. So, for example, 7.7% of, or let's go with one, Asian, 7.3 Asian. How many Asians are there in Portland? So are we serving a lot of Asians? Or are we serving only some? So this unfortunately doesn't tell me very much. So I just want to point out a few things like that and just make sure that, because you don't want to spend time on stuff that doesn't tell you anything.
So let me respond to several points. I think you make some good points. Katie, what I'd like to do is to get you a copy of our entire 2014 performance report, which has all of our performance measures. And then, I don't know, Andrew, if you or Ryan want to address why you chose these particular performance measures and what it shows.
Sure. So, Katie, I think you're actually exemplifying one of the great things about the performance dashboards, and that's that they're there to spark more questions. And what I would say is that we worked a lot with the Bureau to identify what the key performance measures would be, trying to capture measures that would track the Bureau's core services. I think what you're talking about, you know, like right now is the service being delivered is access to parks and recreation centers. What you want to know, though, is like who's having that access. And the best practice in performance management is to not just to look at the the top tier of the measure, but it's to look at sort of like the drill down after you get after you've looked at that top tier of the measure. So we know like right now that that 70% of Portland residents are within 3 miles of community center. Your question, I think, then is who are those residents that are within that within that 3 miles of the community center? You're asking the demographic and equity impact of access to community centers.
I am, and right. Actually, what I'm right. asking is who's using those, not if they live there, but who's right. using them.
Exactly. Right.
And so, that's one of the reasons that we began the collection of data, Katie, about a year ago. We didn't have any data about who was using. So all we using our facilities, our community centers. So all we had to look at was the census, and that was the community. And we said, well, that doesn't identify where there may be gaps. So if we, for example, are in a neighborhood that has a high Asian population, and yet we find that, you know, only half that percentage is using our community centers, then it's informing us on maybe we should be changing our program. So that's why we started that PrEP program, to really sort of zoom in on who we are serving and how does that compare to our potential mm-hmm. market.
One okay. more illumination of this, I think it would be good for you to see that full analysis, but
yes.
maybe if you could spend a minute, Dante, and explain how the Bureau used the budget equity tool. And that might be a good lens to keep looking at each of the how the budget, how the bureaus have approached that this time around.
Sure, thank you. Probably in the packet and at the end of their documents is a budget equity assessment tool that each of the bureaus had to do. And within that, they broke it down and had to answer questions regarding the demographics of those who use their services. Identifying populations impacted, potential positive impacts, and potential negative impacts. And so in the tool, they've broken it down to African-American, Latino, Bhutanese, East African, Somali, and so on. And so they have done an evaluation on the various populations geographically, as well as demographically, looking at some of the GIS mapping that BPS has created to detail who lives where in this city. And so they have, in fact, taken, I think, a very good effort at taking a look at who is specifically impacted in the use of their programs.
Okay. If I could comment on that, it was really interesting to me. Last year was my first budget advisory committee process with Portland Parks and Recreation. This was the second. Last year we did use the budget tool, the equity tool, and there was a lot of discussion, well, what does this mean, and we don't really understand. This year, our equity and inclusion manager, Art Hendricks, gave us a training at the Budget Advisory Committee about equity, and then at each meeting, a reminder about those kinds of things. And the quality of the discussion on equity issues was completely different from last year. It was excellent. I will say, however, that the piece that's maybe not as robust yet is about people with disabilities, that we look at geography, we look at race, we have huge challenges in Portland Parks and Recreation with accessibility, and that's, again, something that's a little more difficult to highlight in a performance dashboard, and something that we'll be asking the Commission on Disability and our own Accessibility Commission to, committee to look into.
Thank you, and I appreciate that there's a lot of work being done in this area, and I was looking at the equity lens, but I think it's brand new. Again, I would like to see more measure in it, less verbs, you know, verbiage, and I think if you've got something that's called a dashboard, that means that you're going to be looking at how Parks is doing. And so people are going to want to know that you're active in this area. And if your dashboard doesn't show anything about equity or children or your programs are a key part of your... So anyway, I'm going to keep looking at these dashboards, because I think that, you know, a dashboard is something you look at first. And so I think that... when I look at it first, I want to see that.
Don, go ahead.
Mike, three observations that may turn into questions. On your front page, you say you show that you want an increase of 25 FTE. In the back of your package, under the requested budget packages, it shows an increase of 14. I'm betting that the difference is your operations and management staff, that you want to add 11. Okay. Are they not included here because it was, what's the reason? Okay. Enough said. Okay, that's fine. Because I have not much to do, I went through your entire budget package online and read everything. One thing that struck me, moving from the East Coast, and I'm a golfer, there